Angie's List is now Angie, the nation's largest home services marketplace. And Angie is here to help homeowners get all their jobs done well. Angie has helped over 150 million homeowners care for their homes. Whatever your home project, big or small, indoor or outdoor, come to Angie to connect with and hire skilled professionals to get the job done well. My son needed a major yard cleanup at his new home. We went straight to the Angie website and found a bunch of local, reliable, and affordable pros to handle the job, and one did pronto. Angie can help you find the best price for your project. Angie lets you request and compare quotes from multiple pros in just a few taps, or book services at an upfront price based on local data. Angie has cost guides that tell you what others have paid for similar projects, both nationally and in your area. Get started at Angie.com. That's ANGI.com, or download the app today. The app and website are free to use. Hello, ladies. Hello, gentlemen. This is the Victor Davis Hanson Show. I'm Jack Fowler. The host, the star namesake Victor Davis Hanson, is the Martin and Ely Anderson Senior Fellow at the Hoover Institution and the Wayne Amasha Buskey Distinguished Fellow in History at Hillsdale College. Victor has a website. The Blade of Perseus is its name. Its web address is victorhanson.com. Folks, you should be visiting there frequently. And I'll tell you why towards the end of this particular episode. We are recording on Saturday, April 13th, and this particular episode will be up on Thursday, what is it, the 18th of April. Plenty to talk about, and including, Victor, the recent news about the $24 billion that California has spent on homelessness in the last 5 years, and nobody knows what the F this money has done, where it's gone to. And while it's being spent, of course, homelessness is on the increase in the once golden state. We have that. We have some generals involving themselves in Supreme Court matters, NPR and some other media stories. We'll get Victor's views on all these things right after these important messages.
Can't pay the IRS? Haven't filed in a while? Receiving threatening letters? Yeah, it's about to get worse. The IRS is hiring an army of agents targeting hardworking Americans like you. You need warriors on your side. You need Tax Network USA. Tax Network USA has brilliant strategies to solve your IRS problems quickly and in your favor. For instance, they've discovered a limited-time special offer that the IRS is willing to waive $1 billion in penalties. Find out if you qualify before it's too late. Never call the IRS alone. Let Tax Network USA attorneys handle it. They have preferred direct lines to the IRS. They know which agents to work with and which to avoid. They've resolved over $1 billion in tax debts and offer a best-in-class guarantee. Schedule your free consultation now. Call 1-800-245-6000. That's 1-800-245-6000. Or visit TNUSA.com/Victor. TNUSA.com/Victor.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Bite.
We are back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, California cannot account for $24 billion that it's spent on the homeless since 2019, and it can't assess the impact of that
massive spending. I've saw some numbers that since 2019, despite all that money out of your pockets and the pockets of others who have probably fled the state now, homeless numbers have risen 20%, approaching 20,000 in your state.
Well, I think we know where it went. It went to
yeah,
two,
go ahead.
It went to three groups, the homeless themselves, and that meant did they get the money and save it up and then after a while put a down payment on rent? No. It went for drugs or whatever their particular preferences of intoxicant is, because many of them suffer from mental health issues and self-medicate. Number two, it went to the state bureaucracies that are in charge of this problem that do nothing. If you look at the results of, we have more homeless than ever. And then three, it went to these private contractors who go to the state and say, we need this so many millions for this shelter or that shelter or this program. But it doesn't deal with the problem. The problem is that if you were not suffering from a mental or physical ailment, it would be very hard in California, especially if you've come here recently or you've been divorced or you're older, to find housing. Why? Because we do not allow builders to build new developments, new apartment buildings without strict regulations. It's not just the ones that are important, like earthquake, but it's things like, is your drywall made from green materials, that kind of stuff. And it's just regulation after regulation, and it's too expensive. And so if you want to get a new home in a depressed area like mine, it's probably $400,000 or $500,000. If you want to buy one on the coast, I was just looking today at a development in Seaside, which wasn't necessarily the nicest area of Monterey, but it's a very, you know, it's a nice place. They're about $1.5 million for a new home, about 2,200 square foot with no yard, basically. So that's the problem. And they don't know how to deal with it, because to deal with it would have to be a rejection of all their philosophy. They'd have to force people who had mental problems to get aid. They'd probably have to go and get 100, 200 acre vacant lots and put tents and humane restrooms and have a doctor on call and then force people to get off the street and force them. And they're not capable of that. They just can't do it. And so what they do is they virtue signal and say, not in my name, how dare you infringe on the right of homeless, but I'm not going to get anywhere near them. That's their attitude, the left. So it's not going to change. It isn't.
Yeah.
It's we used to have a hobo problem, and the people who were mentally ill went to state mental hospitals, and the other people who felt that they could live on their own, if they couldn't, weren't able, their family took care of them. As I said on earlier podcast, I think my grandfather told me he had 27 people here during the Depression from 31, 29, I don't know, all the way to 1940 until the war started, 41 till the war started. But
yeah,
I've met a lot of them who've come by in the years since I've lived here, the last 50 years. And second cousins, third cousins, aunts, uncles, basically saying, we camped out in your barn. Where's the shed we lived? We lived in the pump house, that kind of stuff. But we don't do that anymore.
No, throwing money at it. It's all cruelty.
That's all we do. Yeah. In California, they had a poll not too long ago, Jack, and they asked the average Californian, what percent does the 1% pay of the total income tax, which is the 1% pays somewhere depending on the year. It's less because so many have left, but and it's gone down as far as qualifying as the 1%. It's about 45 to 48% of all the taxes is paid by one, and the 5% pay about 80%. But most people, what do you think the 1%? Oh, they pay 20%, maybe 30% of the tax. That's about. And then the people are leaving not just because of the, but because of stories like this. They feel that they're paying 13% of their income on the top brackets, and they're getting the worst, among the worst schools in the nation, among the worst infrastructure in the nation, among the worst homeless problem in the nation, among the worst illegal alien problem in the nation. And they have about the worst healthcare system in the nation. And it's a beautiful, rich state sitting on 2 billion barrels of immediately usable oil and more natural gas. And we're importing it from Saudi Arabia and Alaska. They look at all this and they say, you know, I pay all these taxes and I get nothing in return. And then they look at Newsom and what the rhetoric that comes out of the legislature. You didn't earn that. And you got to pay your fair share and your this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That's why nobody ever remarks. That's a reason why we have left wing billionaires and everybody says, why they're so left wing? Yes, I know. It's because they're never subject to the consequences of their own ideology because they have the money. But a lot of it is they understand that if they are conservative, they become targeted and they feel that psychologically they can feel good about themselves by being left wing, or on the contrary, they won't be a target if they're left wing. And so they put up with being damned, even though they know they pay half the income tax in many years. And right. They don't get anything in return. And then they think, well, you know, I don't really go down the 101 and commute. I stay home and Zoom, or I fly overseas. Yeah, it's hard to get to the airport. Yeah, I don't really, you know, my neighborhood in Hillsboro or Atherton or Piedmont or Nob Hill, Pacific Heights, Presidio, it's not that bad. I have private security. We don't let the riffraff come in. And as far as school goes, my kids go to prep school or private universities, so I don't really get affected by the dismal school. And so they navigate around it. And it's the people that they call, you know, illiberal that have to deal with the consequences of what they vote for. I was talking to my wife not long ago, and she made a good point. I was saying, look at why do people vote? So she said, I don't have any sympathy. Don't have any sympathy. They voted. They voted for this. Mm-hmm. They vote, they vote, they vote, they vote. They get what they want. And then they start whining. And then they vote again. Then they're told, this is what happens when you vote for these people. And then they vote for them again. And so, you know, historically, civilizations commit collective suicide. They know what they're doing, but they just can't stop.
Well, but especially in, it seems, where you live, Victor. I mean, I'm provincial as the next guy. And the first time every time I've gone to California, it's like, wow, this place is special. And I'm putting you on the spot here. And I just wonder if there's any place so generally beautiful, God's, you know, smiled and blessed.
I've been all over the world. There isn't. Yeah,
that has been so self-destructive.
I know.
Self-inflicted suicide.
I go back to, it was in early June of 1976, and I was 23, and I came home from Stanford University to work on the farm for my grandfather. I think he knew he was dying. He was 86. But he died suddenly a month later. And he was sitting out in what's my yard right now. And I can remember the exact day. It was June 10th. I don't know why I remember that, of 1976. And he was sitting there. Maybe it was June 9th or 10th. And he had this chair that we still have. It's an iron outdoor chair. And he looked out one day and he was sitting there. He was actually working that day. He was digging furrows and irrigating. 86. And he said, you know, sit down. Don't you just take a break, Victor. So I sat down on a stump. We had just cut down a tree. And he said, near him in the yard. And he said, this is paradise. Look at this natural paradise. Can you think of any other place in the world that's so beautiful? It's like a patchwork. It's irrigated. It's so beautiful. And then he said, have you ever seen a more peaceful place? He said, we don't even lock our doors. And he said, then you got this farm and this farm. And he mentioned all of these farmers around. They were all ethnic. There's this Mexican-American, this Armenian, this Punjabi, this Japanese. So it wasn't white supremacy at all. And he just said, these are such nice people. They're all so hardworking. This is just, you're so lucky to live here. I hope you come back and take care of the house for me when I'm gone. And your mother's here and your father's here. It was... It's really hard to screw this up. It really is. You have to have people who are not just incompetent, but malicious, that really did hate
Willful,
California.
right.
Willful. It's not willful blindness. It's willful maliciousness,
right.
Venomous, toxic. They really wanted to destroy. When you could look at those big city prosecutors or any of these prosecutors, it wasn't just they felt bad that so-called underprivileged people of color who were repeat felons or the poor were being incarcerated. They wanted them out. They wanted them to keep doing what they're doing. And they do it. They do it again and again and again. And so these police that have been killed in the last 3 months, you look at the people who killed them. They've been out, 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 out. They know it. And their attitude is, well, you people are privileged. You think you're going to have a little nice secluded life. Maybe you're not. We're going to let these people out until you change the system. And so that's...
Well, that's right. If we may, Victor, can we pick up on that point? Because it ties in a little with the recent death of OJ and justice. And justice doesn't matter if dependent upon the political results in America. And let's get your thoughts on that right after these important messages.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient, comfortable. Ah.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, I'm so glad you brought up the point just before we went to the break. I was reading the New York Post today. Some little old Greek American lady going to her Orthodox church in New York City, pushed down the steps by a guy who'd been let out of prison. Let out. He wasn't even in prison. You know, 6-7 times. She cracked her skull. Brain bleed. How many times is this happening? In how many cities across?
Hey,
across
remember
America?
That. While she was bleeding with a cracked skull, he robbed her, and then he walked away and looked back and saw that she got up and followed her to her car and stole her car.
Stole her car, right?
Yeah.
So, too bad. This is the kind of thing that needs to happen until the systemic racism changes. And a lot of this mindset began with O.J. Simpson, and who died last week. Is there any and who's some CUNY, City University of New York professor? So yeah, he killed his wife. He cut her head off, but he deserved to be exonerated. Because
he wrote it. Didn't he write a weird book, If I Was Going to Kill My Wife, where he almost kind of, I don't.
Yeah.
He wrote it. I mean, he knew he was guilty. Everybody knew he was guilty. I can remember the very day I was teaching a night class at Cal State, right near my house, 30 miles away. And the student union was full and they were watching. In those days, they didn't have a lot of televisions on campus. And there was what we would call a big screen, maybe 36 inches then. And it was surrounded by people, and I was preparing to go. And in the late afternoon, they announced, early evening, I guess it was, the verdict. And they all started cheering. They all started cheering. And I could not believe it. And I walked up, and a student I knew really well was taking my class. He goes, "Hey, OJ got out." I said, "He cut his wife's head almost off." And I went through the evidence. It didn't matter. And it doesn't matter today. You know, it was very funny then because there were two an African-American couple that I really liked. And they were both she had been very prominent in the 60s in campus activities, and he was too, but they were now in their 40s or 50s. And they both, unfortunately, had HIV. In those days, people didn't know whether HIV, you know, if you cough on somebody and all that stuff. So they wanted an independent study in ancient history for their history major. And I was, at that point, teaching in both departments, classics and history. So they came to all these people. Nobody would give it to them because they were terrified about AIDS. So they came into my office and they said, would you give us an independent study and we could meet together, my husband and I? I said, yes, I will. And they said, well, we have AIDS. I said, well, I don't think I'm going to get it to you. You could give it to me. And if you're coughing and everything, you'll go out of the room. So they came every week, and it was right during this thing. And at the end of our 45 minutes, they wanted to talk about OJ. And we went through all the evidence. I would say, well, they have the footprint of this weird Bruno Magli shoe, and there's, what, only 200 sold? And here's how many million shoes are sold. And what are the chances are that OJ would have this particular sole on this particular shoe? You know, it's almost impossible that anybody, you know what I mean? He has this show, this thing, it's one out of 10 million shoes, right? And it's there. And then I would go through Cato. You remember Cato, the thump?
Cato Kalin.
Yes, right. And it was pretty, I heard a thump and that. And then I went through it all. The knife, OJ didn't he train with a knife for a movie? And all, at the time I knew it pretty well. And then I asked them to present their case. And it was that Furman was a racist. And I went through that. And Okay, when it was all over, it was pretty clear that I won the argument.
Right.
And I never forget it. I really liked them. And I kept in contact with them. They became long-haul truckers for a while. And then they did a lot of things. But they were really eager to improve themselves, even though they'd had children that were in prison. And they'd had a lot of really, they were very poor. The weird thing was they had been pretty upper middle class. They were student activists. They had almost finished their degrees, and they had come back 20 years later to finish their degrees. They were very devoted to each other, and they had had HIV from drug use. So anyway, and I asked them to give their, and it was all cosmic. You know what I mean? It was nothing about the, I said, well, you didn't talk about the shoes. You didn't talk about the knife. You didn't talk about the DNA. You didn't talk about the thud. You didn't talk about the timeline. You didn't talk about what his friend was doing at the same time. You didn't talk about the blood on the sidewalk. You didn't talk about, and they didn't, we said, no, we're not going to talk about that. They talked about this social cosmic justice. And I said, well, that's what they're trying. I mean, that's the acquittal, that the whole system is systemic racist. So they start with that premise and nothing can be proven. So we're going to acquit him. It was jury nullification. I had a good friend who became very famous. He's a very wonderful guy about predicting what juries would do based on their social, economic, racial, employment status. And that's very big now. And he's got one of the biggest firms, but that's how he started. And he saw what he could predict what the verdict would be. And that's what jury selection studies are about. And so that was, you're right about it. It was the first time that we mainstream or institutionalized what I would call critical legal theory, that the evidence presented in a normal case cannot be empirically evaluated that would lead to a logical verdict, because the system is created by wealthy, white, heterosexual, Christian males, and they have intrinsic biases, and they created a system that rewards them and punishes everybody else, and that outweighs all evidence.
Yeah,
I keep going back to that. I've done it a lot with Sammy. The only reason it's against the law to steal sneakers is that some guy that lives in Brentwood, doesn't need to steal sneakers. So just to be gratuitous, he went out and made a law against it. But that doesn't mean you have to follow it. If you need sneakers, take them. It's kind of the antithesis of Les Miserables, you know.
Right. Yeah. Well, Victor, I want to take a quick moment, if you don't mind, and for our listeners to mention our sponsor, Brickhouse Nutrition. And they've got a new product called Lean. It's a doctor-formulated weight loss supplement. The studied ingredients in Lean have been shown to help maintain healthy blood sugar levels, help optimize metabolism, and keep your appetite under control. Do that, folks. If your life is a bit stressful and you want to lose weight, add Lean to your healthy diet and exercise lifestyle. Get 15% off and free shipping at takelean.com. Enter the code 15. That's the promo code VICTOR15, Victor15, at takelean.com, takelean.com. And we thank the good people at Brickhouse Nutrition for sponsoring the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Hey, Victor, speaking of legal theories, the nexus of two of your, well, let's just put one of your favorite issues anyway, so it won't be a nexus. Generals, United States Army generals and admirals, a significant number of them. I opened before the show this amicus brief that, a ton of them. Admirals and generals are joining the case against Donald Trump, Jack Smith's case, and arguing against the former president and maybe future president.
On the issues on immunity, whether a president has immunity to which
criminal prosecution.
My problem, and I have to be very careful because I work with a lot of four stars, so I don't mention people's name. But you would think that here we are in the military, depending on which statistic at which month you read, is somewhere between 20 and 40,000 recruits short. They had the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Secretary of Defense, Chief of Naval Operations go before the Congress and the country in a highly publicized testimonies and basically said, we're going to implement diversity, equity, inclusion. Mark Milley, remember Jack, said he was going to find out white privilege, white rage. He was going to learn a lot from Professor Kendi. Going to require that, as the other chiefs did on their reading list. And they were going to run an investigation. And they ran an investigation. It was done in December of last year. They found no systemic racist to white supremacist clique. But again, they lost 20 to 40,000. Recruits, and if you look at the statistics, which I have very carefully, they're not a fall off in women, they're not a fall off in Latinos, they're not a fall off in blacks, they're a fall off in white male. Okay. And then you would think that in the last tumultuous year of the Trump administration, the May to October rioting, at which time we had 120 days of looting, 2 billion property, 35 killed, 1,500 officers, and which the military weighed in. That was when Mark Milley, remember, said he was tricked into having a photo op with the president.
As right.
They all do, but apparently he was. And then we had a series of disclosures that Mark Milley had called his Chinese counterpart and had warned him that if my commander-in-chief, Donald J. Trump, were to go onto the DEFCON 5, 4, 3, 2 all the way, I will notify you first. Seems to me an open and shut case of treason, but nonetheless, he was heroic for doing that, apparently. Then we had another general said Donald Trump was a pathological liar. Then we had another one who said he was Mussolini-like. Then another one said that he was on the wrong side of the beaches at D-Day. He was on the enemy team. He would be. Then we had another one who said that he was doing what the Germans did at Auschwitz, only he was doing it at the border. Then we had another general who said that Trump was a Putin asset. an asset, that he worked for Putin, basically. Then we had a couple of colonels who said that they're going to have to remove Donald Trump and that the Joint Chiefs should start that. And then we had a very famous admiral write an op-ed who said that he should be removed sooner the better, even though we had a scheduled election. Okay. All of those were in violation of Uniform Code of Military Justice. I think it's Article 82. No retired or serving four-star general flag officer shall disparage the commander-in-chief, vice president of the cabinet. They all violated. They knew they did. They knew that the country, the media, the military would not do a thing. Okay, you have all that. You have the problem with recruitment. You have the DEI conglomerate taking over the military, and you have a big pushback. You're losing thousands of votes. Okay. Don't you, and oh, by the way, Jack, last December, the Washington Post published a story saying that 80% of all four-star generals upon retirement go to the defense industry to work. Think of that, 80. So there must be something there that we don't know. What's the big attraction of going to work for people who hire you to help them sell weapons to the Pentagon, where you were one of the leading actors and therefore have a whole network of former subordinates that now are making decisions? Is that it? So there's that. And then we had another op-ed recently by, I think, three retired generals in the Washington Post that said that Donald Trump was an insurrectionary and he would try to overthrow the election. And people in the military had to be vigilant and take the necessary measures. I think it was Easton. I can't remember the names. I'm not going to mention the names because I know some of these people. Okay. So in that environment, wouldn't you think if you were a retired four-star admiral, or it's better to just be quiet? Why would you weigh in to the most contentious, politicized, weaponized matter in the whole universe? The tit-for-tat per investigation versus the Trump, that's a whole mess. And you go in and you try to lend your fides, and you know, you're not a lawyer, you're not a legal expert, and your considered opinion that if this the Supreme Court of the United States cannot find that a president should have immunity from the types of things that are happening to Donald Trump, why would you do that? Why would you do that given all the things that have happened, given what you know? Oh, I'll add one other piece of data. The Ronald Reagan Library each year publishes a survey, as you know, Jack, of your of the national confidence in the U.S. military. It's usually about 75 have high confidence. Last year, it reached an all-time low of 45. This year, it went to 46. This is when Biden is president.
Right.
So given that more than half the country do not have high confidence in the military, given that people are not joining, especially the demographic that dies at double their numbers in combat and in the general population, given that there's been contentions already with the active and retired general class, given that people have been writing essays warning that Donald Trump should be removed before his tenure was up, given that a Pentagon lawyer, Rosa Brooks, wrote in Foreign Policy 11 days after the inauguration that Donald Trump should either be impeached, removed by the 25th Amendment, or removed by a military coup. Given all of that, why would you weigh in? Why would be the purpose of it? Why are these generals and admirals doing it again? What's wrong? What's the entitlement? What's the, especially when 80% of the people who wrote that letter apparently work for the defense industry?
Well, maybe that's it. Maybe that's the why.
I don't know.
It could be if you did not sign this letter once it was percolating that some
that America's left-wing boards of directors of major companies wouldn't hire you because you didn't join. They're all politically motivated.
You'd think they would like Donald Trump. He increased the military budget.
So
my point is that, and I have been getting, I've gotten a lot of indirect criticism. People have come to me and said, you better be quiet about it. So when it's general so-and-so or so-and admiral's really pissed off at you. And so I'm not trying to be inflammatory or, but I do think the people should understand that this is a suicide pact that these retired officers are doing, and they should stop for their own good and for the good of the country. They don't realize that the more they weigh in on contemporary political issues and the more that the left tells them, how dare you not, you should warn the country about this or that, and the more that they fall for that, and then the more that they work for the defense industry at the same time, the more, according to polls, they have lost the confidence of the country in the military. And then you superimpose that in the dismal performance in Afghanistan and the humiliation that happened in the withdrawal, or the humiliation. It's not their fault. It's a commander-in-chief, but the humiliation of being attacked 140 times without a muscular response. And then the stories that were short, dozens of major ships, maybe hundreds of ships and planes and back orders of shells and javelin. There's so many things they could concentrate on and get their house in order rather than weighing in on a contentious Supreme Court decision.
Yeah. Well, Victor, other things our listeners would, I'm sure, want to get your wisdom on. One of them is college costs and the overrating of elite schools. And we maybe have some time also to get your views on some of these media stories, NPR, Exposed, Sage Steele, talking about interviewing Biden. So let's get to some of these matters, starting right after these important messages.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show, recording on Saturday, April 13th. This particular episode is up on Thursday, the 18th. And Victor, here's a couple of headlines. Well, let's take these two higher ed-related stories. This was from someone at National Review wrote, that's the elite story. Insane costs of private school. That's it. The College Fix had a piece about yearly college costs at Vanderbilt. I was a little surprised that it was Vanderbilt, but it's now nearly $100,000 a year for a top private college in America. That's $100,000 all in books, tuition, et cetera. I can't imagine why in 4 years it won't be $125,000 a year for some of these institutions. So, and you've got any thoughts on that, Victor? And then there's a separate piece from National Review about the how some of these same colleges are just so damn overrated, at least as regards their return on investment. So,
oh, they're all – you can go to a state college or – the ones that are most overrated – are your liberal four-year private non-Ivy League, because they have some prestige, but they can't place you or give you a network about the Ivy League. And that particular poll, and I looked at it, when they say, yes, Stanford and Harvard and Princeton and Yale are overcharging, but those are some of the few that may, and particularly depending on your major, give you a good return on your investment. What they're really talking about is you go there with a bunch of wealthy, well-connected, influential children, and you network. It has nothing to do with the education you receive. It's just like saying, we're going to put all the nation's wealthy, powerful people from the best zip codes. We're going to put their kids in Harvard, Yale, Princeton, Stanford, you name it. And therefore, you get a good return on your investment because of your education. No, you don't, because of your education. You do. It doesn't have to be a university. It could be anything. But you get those people and they network. And that's not reflected in the poll, or it would be much worse. But they typically, they're in a doom loop right now, Jack, because they sold the country after World War II, and it was that everybody had to have a BA, and we were going to have a technocracy, so 50% of the country does. And they then got the government to back $2 trillion in student loans. And then they got these big government contracts for research, this or that. Every university, Stanford, it's got almost $1 billion, I think, if not more. And in reaction to that, they started this huge administrative bloat. They hired, and they raised the rate of tuition higher than the rate of inflation. That was just, they did that. And the more that they did that, the more that students had to take out student loans. And they could do that because the student never really saw the bill. He never got a bill that said from Yale, oh, by the way, here's your three classes per semester, a quarter, whatever. And this is the price per hour you're paying. This is the overhead. No, they just pay it, and they either the parents paid it or they added it to their loan. And the result is now they are politicized. If you go into the bookstores, that you look at the reading list for these classes, they're not rigorous anymore. They're not competitive. If you look at STEM, even STEM now, when you're letting in for the third year students without the SAT, and by the way, that's not my editorialization. They bought, in the aftermath of George Floyd, and in some cases earlier, they decided that to advance diversity, equity, and inclusion, they had to get rid of the SAT. That was a barrier because people were starting to publish embarrassing statistics, such as one particular group was 250 points lower than the other particular group and yet was still getting into the university. Okay. So they announced in a very virtuous signaling manner they were getting rid of the SAT, Jack, and they did. And the experiment is out. And now guess what? They're announcing that next year they, most of the Ivy League, are announcing they're going to reinstitute the SAT. Why? Is it a right-wing plot? Did Jack Fowler and Victor Hansen say, you better do that? Did you people out there write to the university says, please? No. It came top down. They went into a big meeting room and closed the door and said, you know what? We are letting people in on criteria other than the SAT and a comparative evaluation of the value of their high school GPA. And the result is we're meeting our diversity, equity, inclusion standards, and we're even getting into repertory admissions. And then our faculty are on our back because they can't teach these students because they're unprepared. And so we have all these remedial classes. And guess what? All these employers, big tech, Google, Facebook, all these people are telling us that the people we're sending out are entitled. They feel they have a right to have a job with us and to dictate our pay. They go to HR in a moment if they have any problem, and they don't know anything. They didn't get educated because they watered down their curriculum, or they gave 80% of the grades were A's, or they added new gut courses. And so as a result, they're it's not worth the $100,000. And they're starting to see gradual, not dramatic, but in most of these, even Harvard, slight 2-3% reductions in applications, but more importantly, the number of people going to trade schools, community colleges going way up, because on the return on the investment after COVID, when you start to see electricians and plumbers making $50-$60 an hour,
right,
and then you see what an environmental studies degree does, over 6 years is the average graduation time it takes now. So do you really want to be 23 years old and owe $200,000 and see what your environmental studies or sociology or ethnic studies degree gets you? You're not going to impress an employer on your vocabulary or your syntax or your ability to compose, you know, engaging English essays for your job. You're not going to be able to do that. And so, but you might be able to be much better off to spend $20,000 and be a master electrician. So that's what's happening to it. It's sad, and but it's what I mean by a doom loop, Jack, is that the fewer people that go to college that can pay the full amount, the more money that the student has to borrow, the larger the student loan federally guaranteed portfolio grows, the more pressure it is on the left to cancel that $2 trillion debt, the more criticism they get from normal people that you're letting 90% of the population, in the case of those who have overdue loans, 90% have to pay for the 10%, and most of them are affluent, the more political flack you get. So the more you what entice students from overseas, and they tend to be from China, the Gulf rich, oil rich Middle East, to come over here, the more foreign students you have, the more stuff you see on campus that we've talked about. And how do you stop it? How do you stop it? You'd have to radically get rid of 90% of the administrators, make everyone teach 3 or 4 classes a semester. No more conferences, no more Claudine Gay plagiarism. Just have people teach and then do real research, but less research because most of it's worthless. And trim your cost and then advertise that you have, you're reading classical authors, medieval authors, history of Western Civ, math, science, biology, and it's rigorous. In other words, what I'm saying is do exactly what Hillsdale College does, right. St. Thomas Aquinas does, St. John's does.
And relatively affordable half the cost of Vanderbilt.
Yeah, and you can do that. And that's why Hillsdale's biggest problem right now is they're swamped with applications in an unprecedented fashion. And then you don't, and then the other thing is that the faculty is not diverse intellectually or ideologically. So a parent knows, say you're a left-leaning parent and your daughter gets into Stanford or he gets Oberlin or Brown, Kenyon or Princeton. So you think, well, I'm probably not going to get a lot of student aid for my kid given my income. So I'm going to have to pay out $400,000 with interest over 4 years, say, I don't know, $450,000. Do I really think my child is going to come home Thanksgiving and Christmas and impress me with a expanded vocabulary or new insights on the world? Or is that child going to lecture me about how I am amoral, right-wing, not DEI? So do you really want to do that? And I think a lot of people are saying, well, the only value in it is that you're stamped like a cow with a brand, a big H for Harvard. And if they're there, you know, maybe their roommate will be the next Mark Zuckerberg, or somebody who have a stock tip or hire somebody, or parents are really powerful. But other than that, there's nothing there anymore. The faculty, I have this bad habit of looking each year at the PhD theses in my own field, and it's worthless. And it's like when I was doing research for a couple of books on military history, I would look at Germany in the 1920s was one of the places to go for Greek and Roman military history. But when you looked at, say, after 1935, for a period between 35 and 40, and you looked at stuff that was coming out of the German universities, it was things like the Aryan makeup of the Spartan nation, or Jewish Hebrew influences, you know, on right. the classical world that were, you know, it was all propaganda. It was worthless, and it is worthless today. And you get the impression that there's going to be a decade or two decades that in 10 or 20 years from now, they're going to look back and say, what were these universities doing? Transsexual ambiguity in the cult of Dionysus. Who wants to read that? I think they're in a doom loop. They're like sort of like San Francisco, and I don't know how they get out. They really are in big trouble. And I wish I could say it's going to hurt the United States, but what made the United States great is we did have this technocracy that was trained at these wonderful universities. But after the 60s, it started to erode, you know, gradually, and now it's suddenly. And I think that their worth is outweighed by the damage they do.
Yeah. Well, Victor, I want to say a word here. It's barbecue. Okay. Just hearing that word makes your mouth water, and you may already have a low temperature, slow cooking smoker, egg, or pellet barbecue. But, dear listener, in the middle of your busy week, who has that kind of time? You need a Hot Fast Solair infrared gas grill. It heats up to 1,000 degrees in just 3 minutes, even on cold winter nights. And all that heat locks in juice and flavor and grills food faster. In just a few minutes, your family will be sitting at the table enjoying delicious, better than restaurant quality grilled food, juicy steaks, moist chicken, tender fish, and healthy grilled veggies. Solair is a multi-generational veteran-owned business. Their portables, carts, and built-ins are all made in the USA from commercial grade stainless steel, so they're built to last. Get your free guide, how to choose the right infrared grill, at besthotgrill.com. That's besthotgrill.com. Solair infrared gas grills for fast, delicious grill food every day. That's besthotgrill.com, besthotgrill.com. And we thank the good people at Solair for sponsoring the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Victor, another topic or two to discuss as we kind of head into the home stretch. How about, Victor, your thoughts on, I don't know if you know anything about the immigration issue, Victor, but Joe Biden, something may have happened, by the way, between when we're recording and when this show is out. But there's this headline in Red State I'm reading right now: Biden to issue executive order to close border. Yeah, right. This is by Ward Clark. Victor, I'm sure our listeners have heard this promise and pledge by the man who led 8-10 million people over our what used to be border. Victor, your thoughts about what Joe Biden may do?
Well, it's so funny because when he came in, everybody, you remember that Mayorkas said specifically, as did Joe Biden. Remember, he said, not one more foot of this wall. That's what he said. That was an executive order. And then you saw those pictures of all the steel rusting that was all ready to go for the new wall. Trump replaced, I think, I don't know, 500 miles of the old wall, and he started about 30 of the new, and they just stopped it. And then Mayorkas bragged that they were going to stop the rejection or the repeal of catch and release. In other words, you could catch somebody, but they were going to be released. And if you wanted to be a refugee, you didn't have to apply in Mexico. You could come here and do it. And da, 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 da. I think there were 60 or 70 things they overturned on the part of Trump. My point, Jack, is that they had executive orders. This is all a ruse. It's a lie. It's all a contortion. Joe Biden, when he says he has to see if he has the authority, no, he doesn't have to see. He had the authority because he's already used it. He's issued a series of executive order for one purpose, to overturn his predecessor's policy and open the border to let in 10 million people. For him, for Mayorkas, for the left, it is win, win, win. A bigger entitlement industry, larger government, more redistributive taxes, A. Two, more people in the particular states that will change the way that we make up congressional districts, because they'll be counted, even if they're illegally here in the census. Three, most of these people, more than 50%, are going to two states, Texas and Florida, the two most despised states and the most despised governor on the part of the left. And they're going there for one purpose, to take these once, well, in the case of Texas, it used to always vote Democrat in the 60s and 50s. Remember Ann Richards? To stop these purple states from turning hard red, which they are now, to reverse it. That was what the agenda was. That's why he executed. Now, there's only one reason he just said what you said. Because when you look at the issues, economy, abortion, immigration is either one, two, or three, depending on the constituency and demographic you pull. And Joe Biden looks at that and says, you know, if this goes on, it's summer's coming up. And we know what happens when summer comes up, people rush the border. They can sleep outside. And it's destroying these Latino communities along the border. And it might not make any difference in Texas, but Texas got smart and they're sending these people everywhere. And when it might not make any difference in Chicago and New York, because their electoral vote is already assured that we have. But you keep sending them into Nevada and Georgia and Arizona, even Colorado. Who knows what will happen? You're alienating our base. So they go to Joe and say, you've got to stop it. And then he says, well, I got to come up with a reason that explains why I did it. We tried to blame the Republicans in the Congress when we cooked up that phony bipartisan immigration deal that would limit only 5,000 illegal entries per day. And they didn't fall for it, although it was helpful. We claimed they opened the border by not voting for our phony bill, but that didn't work. So now I've got to explain how I closed the border when I opened it. And I'll just say, I don't know if I have the authority. I have to find it. I don't know if I have the authority. And everybody who's listening will say, yeah, Joe, you are so constitutional. So the Supreme Court just ruled not too long ago that your blanket amnesty before the midterms to buy votes from student loan holders was illegal. And so now you have another election. And guess what? You just mentioned the Supreme Court and how to get around it. So you just violated the Constitution and overrode your constitutional limitations. You didn't obey the Supreme Court. So if you don't obey the Supreme Court, why would you worry about you can't close the border until you find out whether it's legal or not to have an executive order? So the whole thing is a complete joke. And I think all of us make a deep, deep, deep mistake when we listen to the media and we look at that disaster on the border and we think, oh my God, something went wrong. They're incompetent. We don't have comprehensive immigration reform. Oh, this was deliberate. This was planned. They are delighted. They think it's the biggest success of the entire Biden administration. When they're out of power, they're going to look back and say, you know, you can say all you want, but we got 10 million of our people in here, new voters. Right. And the right went crazy. And nothing made them angrier than what we did. It was Mayorkas is a hero. He did a great job. Now, we lied about it, and we created a lot of public distrust, and made the crime rate go up. We called a lot of mayhem. A lot of people died along the border. But you know what? You got to break some eggs for an omelet. That's how they look at it. That's what happened.
Well, Victor, we have time for one more quick topic, and we may crunch too much in one space, but it'll be about the media, and we'll get to that right after this final important message.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey. Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're back with the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Before I raise it, Victor, I just want to remind our listeners, especially new listeners, and there are a lot of them, to visit your website, The Blade of Perseus. The web address is victorhanson.com. You can sign up for Victor's email list. You can also sign up and subscribe. It costs $5 a month and discounted $50 for the full year. And why would you do that? Why would I subscribe? And there are links to the articles Victor writes for American Greatness and his syndicated columns and the archives of these podcasts and Victor's books and links to other appearances on other shows. But then you will click on links for the ultra articles and you will not be able to read them unless you subscribe. And Victor writes two or three a week. They're exclusive to The Blade of Perseus. And if you're a fan of Victor's writings, you are going to want to read them. So sign up, go to victorhanson.com. And as for me, very quickly, Civil Thoughts is the free weekly email newsletter I write every week for the Center for Civil Society at AMFIL, where we are trying to help nonprofits who are doing the right thing. And we're trying to strengthen civil society. And Civil Thoughts comes every Friday, has 14 recommended readings, an excerpt, a link of articles I've come across the previous week that I think you, dear intelligent American, would like. Go to civilthoughts.com, sign up. It's free. And we are not renting your names or selling your names or doing any of that monkey business. Victor, a couple of things happened media-wise last week or two. We could probably spend an hour getting your thoughts about the NPR story where the long-term editor there came out and said, yeah, this is a left-wing place and there's not any room for any conservative thought. Some other things that came out in the immediate aftermath were if the 87 writers or editors there, every single one of them's a Democrat. There's no room in the inn for anyone who's not a leftist at NPR, and this has gotten more extreme in recent years. And another media story also, Victor, is Sage Steele. Sage Steele was at ESPN for years. She was let go because her mom is white, her dad is black, but she doesn't want to play in the race game. She wants to be Sage Steele. She doesn't want to be Sage Steele. I'm black, I'm white. So that's why she got canned. But she came out. She's been a lot on Fox and other Megyn Kelly's shows and other shows recently. She talked about Biden. And as a reporter for ESPN, she was dictated by her bosses to stick to an explicit script while interviewing Joe Biden. Could not change a word, not a single word. And she stuck to it. You know, that was what the bosses do when she did it. But that's how one had to deal with Joe Biden, especially from a company owned by ESPN, owned by ABC, some journalistic operation there. And no one's surprised, Victor, by the kid gloves that Joe Biden has long been given by the media. So anyway, Victor, those are two stories. Any thoughts about them as we head into the hometown, down to the finish line here?
And when you look at Joe Biden, I'll answer the second question first. don't be surprised by Sage Steele's admission that she was given a series of questions and she couldn't deviate from it. Or don't be surprised when you see Joe Biden and he has a pre-selected group of journalists he calls on. Or don't be surprised that he won't give an impromptu interview at the Super Bowl. I'm not saying he can't have moments. You put him in bed for 3 or 4 days before a presidential debate in 2020 or the State of the Union. Maybe you give him a stimulant like Adderall or something. I don't know. He can, for brief moments, shout and yell. Not that he's cognizant, but he's animated. But given his mental state and the geometric rate of decline, what would you do? What would you do? If you're listening right now, you're Mr. Smith, what would you do if you were presented with that challenge? You've got a person who's one step, one fall, one trip away from oblivion. You've got a person that if you don't take, if you take your eye off him at the tarmac in Finland or at a campaign stop, he may go over and blow some young girl's hair. He may turkey gobble her neck. He may call her out and say, "You're really sweet looking," to a 12-year-old. Or what would you do if he starts to slur and you can, nobody, it's a language that nobody's heard before. I mean, it's just slurry slurs. Or what would you do when you put him on the stage? You put little arrows because he could go shake somebody's hand. It doesn't exist. So my point is this. Of course they have to do this. They have no choice. So if he's going to give an interview, you've got to get the questions to him and have him script it and tell that interviewer there's not going to be any sudden gotcha questions. You go do that with Donald Trump, but not Joe Biden. And it's obvious now, and it's going to increase as this campaign comes. It's very ironic, of course. This comes from a media that always tells us that democracy dies in darkness. And it's so independent, and it's provocative, and it's edgy. That's only in the case of Trump. They are the most obsequious, toady appeasers in the world. They understand that he cannot be elected without their help, and they will do all they can to condition him. As far as the NPR, I guess the guy's name was Yuri Berliner.
Yes.
He basically came out and said, there was zero Republicans on the editorial staff. It said 80-something to zero. They didn't. Nobody said that's wrong. Nope. They didn't say you're lying. And then he said that this gradual politicization that's now accelerated to complete monopoly of the left over NPR, and by extension, it's PBS too, where David Brooks is considered a conservative, to give the conservative point of view. He pointed out that as this accelerated into a complete monopoly, it dovetailed with a crash in audience. Nobody's listening to it anymore. It's been radical, the fall off in the NPR audience. And then he made this the next correlation, Jack, that it was very ironic because they prided themselves on diversity, equity, inclusion as defined not by ideology, but by ethnic or racial identification. And yet their audience shrank to bicoastal, white, affluent, liberal elites. So the more that they got Black or Latino, liberal, bicoastal elites and mouthed the same stuff, the more Black audiences, Latino audiences, poor people fled. So now they're just an echo chamber. So when you look for the response, nobody said, that's a lie. Our viewership's going up. That's a lie. We have the most diverse listening audience, much more than Fox. That's a lie. That's a lie. There's plenty of No, they didn't do any of that. They just said, we take issue with what he said. They were mute. It was like, number one, that SOB is not supposed to say all that. It's true, but you're not supposed to say it. And two, how do we fire him? If we fire him right now, or shut him up were government employees. Something could happen. So we got to wait, and then we'll find out something he did 30 years ago and bring it up.
Right.
And that's what's going to happen. I tell you what should happen. If Donald Trump gets elected, I know that people think the head of the public broadcasting is no big deal. It is a big deal. It governs a lot. They should take Vivek Ramaswamy and they say, Vivek, go clean it up. And take somebody with energy who knows tech and media and is really smart and is really well-spoken. And he is. I know that I've criticized him as a presidential candidate. But for this job, he has all the prerequisites. And he would clean that thing up in 2 minutes. And all he has to do is say, you know what? I'm going to start hiring conservatives until we got 50-50. I'm sorry. We're just going to do it. It's called DEI. It's called diversity, equity, and inclusion. But it's going to be defined. And I don't care what color they are. I don't care what gender. If I have to hire all black conservatives, it's going to be great. But we're going to do that. I wish they would. The thing about black conservatives are like French conservatives. When you have a demographic that is entirely liberal, and then you see somebody who is an independent thinker, they tend to be more articulate, better reasoned, more analytical than almost anybody. And so when you look at French intellectuals, even late stage Camus or Aron or any of those people, they were so much smarter than the left-wing, normal, trash-talking, boilerplate French. And when you look at caliber of Roland Fryer, Shelby Steele, Tom Sowell, wasn't that they were much smarter and much more analytical and better writers than black liberals. They were better than anybody. I mean, anybody, white, black, it didn't matter, and they had to be, because they were subject to a lifetime of abuse, not necessarily from black people, but from white liberal wealthy people. Right. And white liberal wealthy people think like this. Well, I've done so much. My father was on the civil rights motorcade. You know, he went down and was a freedom rider. And I always vote liberal. And I supported LBJ when my parents did. And I just don't understand why these black people don't do what I tell them. Because I'm a liberal genius, and they've been a beneficiary of my liberal. They owe me. That's their attitude. Right. It really is.
I've earned the right to boss them around.
Yeah. And then when they see somebody who's 10 times smarter than they are, more analytical, they go ballistic. They go ballistic.
I don't think there's an equivalent for Uncle Tom. Like, if you're Shelby Steele or Eli, his son, or whatever, and you're disparaged in that way, I don't think there's an equivalent that you, Victor, or I could be, so labeled. So that really is a test, a crucible that they go through their whole lives.
The closest, the only thing I've ever had, and it's not even it's shame on you. I get emails a lot, and it's, you know better. You have a PhD, you wrote books, and yet you're an ignoramus. That kind of, you should know better. I can see the MAGA people. Well, number one, the MAGA people that I know who don't have college degrees are usually self-employed, and they're 10 times smarter than PhDs, and half of them tell me stuff that I hadn't even thought about. So number one, that is totally bogus. That anybody who writes or has a PhD knows more than a guy who runs a business or is a master electrician. And then the other thing is that you have to be humiliated or feel bad according to my point of view, my value system. And it's really funny because as I tell people, I write back to some of them. I've had people write, I liked your book. You know, it must be on boilerplate. I really like War like no other. I like corn, but then once I saw what I threw it against the wall, or I stomped it, or I lit it on fire. I thought, wow, can't whoever lights a book on fire? Come on! But they write you that, and then they'll see you. I've had people especially former colleagues. And it's really funny because they think it really bothers you, or that you're going to think, oh my God, the Department of Foreign Classical and Foreign Languages doesn't like me. You know what I mean? That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
As if it's weird at their impression of their power influence.
Well, Victor, you've been terrific. We've got to bring this to a conclusion. And as we normally do, we thank our listeners, especially the new ones. Well, I think maybe especially the old ones. I should put that for hanging in here now. We're four or five years into this.
You know, I want to say one last thing.
Sure.
Two things very quickly. I was thinking the other day, I got a letter from Tom Sowell, and he was talking about the need for conservative authors to have websites and stuff. Very interesting. Yeah. I got a reply to him. But of all the people I met at the Hoover Institution and at Stanford University, and I met a lot of smart people, there was nobody who had the combination of common sense and intellectual depth that he did, of all of them. I mean, I went to lunch with him twice a month, and I would see people come and sit down. Sometimes even former mentors, former students that would come by, and he was just give them master class in refutation. He could refute them. It was really amazing to see how quick he was and how well reasoned he was, how smart. He came up with all sorts of just plain truth, and he had that ability to cut through all of this. He was very widely read. And
you haven't seen him in a while, right? I only ask because I've gotten a few questions.
I haven't seen him personally, but I correspond with him a lot.
Okay.
He's I think he's 94 now.
Yeah.
But the point I'm making is that I don't know if it's he had to be given the abuse. I know he had natural talent and brains, but it was something. I asked him that once, and he every once in a while he would send me a book. Like, give you one example. There was a classic book called The Influences of Geographic Environment. And it was by a brilliant woman named Semple. Written, I think, in the 40s. But the point was she was trying to explain Greece and Rome and the medieval world in terms of their position to the Mediterranean versus the Atlantic, or mountain versus fertility land. Mm-hmm. It was really ahead of its time. It was kind of like Brodel, but ahead of him. And I knew it really well, only because that was a book I used extensively when I wrote The Other Greeks. And Tom sent it. I got this big, heavy package, and it was a rare copy of it, hard book. And it just said, Victor, I know you've known this book, but you should have it on your shelf. And he's done that with about four or five books. My point is, there's some great books that we don't read anymore that were classics in the 40s or 50s.
Right.
And he knows them all. That's all he does. He doesn't trust faddish literature. He goes back to the champion.
That would make for a great article, Tom Sowell's Forgotten Books Reading List.
It would.
Yeah. Why don't you and ask him?
Well, he's a very private person. I've been very
careful. Yeah, I know.
But the other thing is, my books came yesterday, so I have a hardback, The End of Everything.
And oh, good.
Just came out. The pub date is May 7th, but Sammy and I, because I'll be gone, on the 80th anniversary of Normandy, we're taking 160 people to Normandy, that we're going to talk about ancient Thebes, Carthage, Constantinople, Tenochtitlan, or what we know as Mexico City, with the introduction to how societies are annihilated. And then I think the most interesting will be the fifth one that Sammy and I do on It Can Happen Again. What are the vulnerable civilizations? What are the neighborhoods they have to live in? And who is threatening to wipe them out? Not just destroy them, but wipe them out.
Yeah. It is called annihilation, after all.
It is. It's very rare. I mean, usually we didn't wipe the Japanese out. We didn't wipe the Germans out. But it happens. Sometimes it's because of the vulnerability of the target. Sometimes it's... I'll just give you a brief hint. the people who wipe people out, they're not Genghis Khan necessarily. They're not even Hitler. There are people that are intellectuals. There are people who were taught by Aristotle, if you're Alexander the Great. There are people like Scipio Aemilianus, who founded the Scipionic Circle of Intellectuals. There are people like Hernan Cortez, who was a very educated, you know, lawyer and very articulate person. There are people like Mehmet II, who said he was the new Caesar and he was going to reclaim the Roman imperial tradition as a Muslim, and he had a huge library. There are people, in other words, that have pretension to intellectual excellence and philosophy, etc. Those are the ones you've got to watch.
Well, these will be podcasts for listeners when you're gone, the podcast is not gone. So to look forward to, I guess, sometime in later May, Victor and Sammy doing 5 or 6 podcast series on the book. Might be good to get the book, dear listeners, read it and hear Victor's reflections on the book as through the podcast. So, hey, Victor, I have one comment to read from folks that many people post their comments at iTunes and Apple. Of course, you can rate the show there, 0 to 5 stars. Thank you, everyone who does that. Most people leave 5 stars, 4.9% ranking. It's terrific. This particular comment is titled Sunny, and it goes, I love the show, fan of VDH for more than a decade. Eeyore has the most brilliant perspective on humans. My mother taught me there's nothing new under the sun, and VDH brings it home every week with ancient scripts and perspectives from ancient Greece, Rome, Byzantium, etc. I'm a top student at 63, he says. My reason for commenting is Sunny. Each week you lather us with your voice, warm honey lathered with melted butter. I know I'm not the only one who enjoys this part of your podcast. Anyway, keep sharing your commentary and know your listeners enjoy both of you. And I think by the both, he's meaning Sammy there. This is signed Daryl from Whidbey Island, Captain Capt D23. Well, Daryl, Capt D23, however you want to go by, thanks for that kind words. Victor, thanks for all the warm honey lathered wisdom you've shared today. And we will be back soon with another episode of the Victor Davis Hanson Show. Bye-bye.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on Auto Trader. Just you wait. Auto Trader.